Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery, and that is why the Machinery Digest exists, a no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello, my friends, and welcome to Idle Chatter. As you know, I am Ray Bohax, the Hot Rod Farmer, coming to you, as always, from Cat Swamp Road in beautiful Warren County, New Jersey. So hopefully the sound of my voice is finding things going well for you, as I wish you every week. And I have a couple of things I wanted to go over with you today, or just actually tell you about, probably more than go over. Before I start today's talk, which today's show is going to be about thinking outside the box. But before we get into that, I am very, very proud to tell you, and so I thank you in advance for allowing me to share this with you, because I'm like a father with their first child, right, in the nursery. I'm very proud of it. So I'm very proud to tell you that as of this past Friday, that my Idle Chatter podcast is been picked up and being hosted also at the Farm and Ranch Ag Network. So that's FRAN, Farm and Ranch Ag Network, and that's a great, great, great website that hosts a number of podcasts. And what's really great about that, what's really great about FRAN, everything today is an acronym, right? So we got to call it FRAN instead of Farm and Ranch Ag Network. But what's really great, as far as I am concerned, about FRAN is that they are started and formed by a group of our peers, that they are farmers. And there's nothing that brings joy to one's heart more than being accepted by your peers. And, you know, as an aside to that, and I say this humbly, and I said this to the people at FRAN, is that over the years, I've literally been read by millions and millions of people. And that's not an exaggeration. I have, I stopped counting at 3,000 published magazine articles and 3 books. And I mean, some of the magazines that I have written for over the years had a 1.5 million subscribers, not counting what they call pass-along readership. And their survey and audit, what they do is their survey used to say that 92% of the people read me, and that actually was Hot Rod Magazine. And but you know, all of those were corporate structures, and it was a blessing, and I really appreciated all of those people reading me and dealing with all of those companies over the years. I used to be published when the publishing business was more dynamic in 14 different titles every month. And that would, you know, float up and down. Sometimes it'd be 18, sometimes it'd be 13, but around 14 titles every month. But those were all corporate entities, and FRAN is not. And the Farm Machinery Digest is not. And the majority of the listeners to my podcast are not corporate entities. Sure, your farm may be incorporated for tax purposes, but that's only on paper. You're not truly a corporate entity. So I want to thank FRAN very much, and I encourage you to go to their website and listen to my podcast there, and listen to the others from the other great podcasters that are there. And I also encourage you to go to my website, farmmachinerydigest.com, because the Idle Chatter podcast is only a small, small portion of what this is all about, and it's to educate you, the American farmer, to become more profitable in your business. That almost sounds like a commercial, right? But I guess it is, but it just rolled off my tongue that way. But the other thing that I'm very, very proud of is that starting today, the special delivery segment, which is where readers or of the website and listeners, I was going to say viewers, and listeners of the podcast write in letters with questions about different things. And as of today, my special delivery section is brought to you by Firestone Ag. And I am very, very proud of that because Harvey Firestone was a farmer. And Harvey Firestone's passion was both agriculture and education. And I am humbly saying, is that I share those both with Mr. Firestone, that the impetus for the Idle Chatter podcast and the Farm Machinery Digest website is my passion for agriculture and my heartfelt desire to educate the farmer to become more profitable in their shop by knowing their equipment better and for being able to execute better repairs and diagnostics. So Mr. Firestone and I share that same passion. I know that it's not God's plan for me to be as financially successful as Harvey Firestone, but that's fine. But I want to welcome Firestone Ag aboard, and I just say it's an honor that I do not take lightly. And when you listen to Special Delivery, just know that it is being brought to you by the good people at Firestone Ag, the home of the 23-degree tread bar design and the 82 technology IF and VF tires. So a couple other things as far as housekeeping is concerned, not to bore you with, but I am working on with my web designer and web guru, Susan Moore from Moore Good Inc. down in Georgia. Great, great, great people. If anybody's looking for a website for their farm, I strongly suggest that you give Susan Moore a jingle or send her an email and let her at least talk to you. And we're working on setting up a Hot Rod Farmer YouTube channel. So I think that one other element that I need on this whole journey of educating the farmer is to have a YouTube channel where I could do short educational videos. I've been blessed to work with Successful Farming Magazine on their TV show as the Successful Farming Engine Man, and I love doing that. And actually, the new season for that show is starting November 1st, Thursday. And I am supposed to be, according to the schedule, be on there with a wheel bearing little segment. But due to the constraints of that show and the time slot that they have, is that I can only have 3 or 4 minutes. And I love working with the guys at Successful Farming and hope to still be on their TV show for a long time. But I would also like to supplement that with the Hot Rod Farmer YouTube channel, if I'm saying that incorrectly, and to be able to do maybe 12 or 15 minute instructional videos or instructional lessons. So I'm working on setting that up, and hopefully after the new year that may be rolling. And the other thing I wanted to tell you about is that as a journalist, I'm a member of IMPA, International Motoring Press Association. I'm able to get press vehicles from the car manufacturers. And what I'm going to start to do is do a road test and chassis dyno test on different vehicles that would interest farmers. So predominantly trucks, but because I am the Hot Rod Farmer, I may sneak in a 600 horsepower Mustang, a Camaro, or a Challenger or something in there, but just for fun. But that is, I'm going to be doing those, and that will actually be on the website, and it'll be under the Getting to Know series. So now that all that housekeeping is done, I want to get to the core topic of this podcast today. And as you all know, or if you don't know, you're going to know right now, is that I farm in New Jersey. And farming in New Jersey brings about many, many obstacles that those that farm in a predominantly agrarian area do not face. And it also brings into play some opportunities that someone that's really out in the middle of farm country or in the corn belt somewhere would not have. And one of those opportunities is to be able to be exposed to different things and different businesses and different peoples and different mindsets. Our farm is probably about 60 miles from New York City and about 75 miles from Philadelphia, but the direct route, it's much more of a direct route to New York City than Philadelphia, so we're really not influenced by them. But New Jersey is small, and it has a it's actually positioned between those two metropolitan areas. And then what that does is that we have a little bit of everything and a lot of nothing, if that makes sense. So we do have a strong agricultural presence, but the farms are nowhere near as large as the people out west or down south. But it does give us the opportunity, or gives it not just me, but it gives anybody the opportunity to be exposed to different lifestyles and different businesses and different mindsets. And that's good in a way, and sometimes it's bad, but for the most part it's really good, because it allows you to interface with different technologies. And I don't mean technologies as far as electronics, but different way businesses and people do different things. And the whole part is to try to bring that back to the farm. And if anyone has read my editorial column, my monthly editorial column called Flags Across the Harvest, and if you read the first one, Flags Across the Harvest, number one, when I was a young boy, we had a neighbor that worked in New York City, or actually in Manhattan, as a tugboat dispatcher for a company called McAllister Towing. And they had many, many different tugboats. They also had seagoing tugs. And those are tugboats that actually tow barges across the ocean. And I was very enamored and by this tugboat lifestyle, because Mr. Larson used to tell me stories as a young boy about life at sea and life on the tugboats and what have you. And I really romanticized about it and had a lot of interest in it. But anyway, is that one day he got us on a tugboat, my dad and I, and we went into New York City. We went, I believe it was to Battery Park, and there's a wall that holds back the bay there, or the ocean, they call it the Battery Seawall. And this huge tugboat pulled up. I think she was 177 feet long, and it was an ocean-going tug. It was the Helen McAllister. And we jumped aboard the McAllister, and my dad and I spent about 17, 18 hours on the McAllister. And I talk about it in that editorial. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience. But the point I'm trying to get at is that because of that day on the tugboat, it influenced my life in many, many ways. But also I learned a term that many of you may not be familiar with, and it's called brackish water. And what brackish water is, if you have a river, let's say like the Mississippi, or in my case, the Hudson River, and it meets the ocean, the river itself is fresh water, but the ocean is salt water. And then what happens is the tides go in and out, the salt water migrates up into the fresh water. And what would happen is, as you come from the ocean into the river, at first the water is salty, and then it becomes what they call brackish, which is a mixture of fresh and salt water. And then the further you go up the river, it becomes less brackish, and then becomes sweet water or fresh water, however you want to call it. So, living in New Jersey and farming in New Jersey is a brackish experience, and that has allowed me to, and others also, to be exposed to thinking outside the box, because you were able to see, as I said a few minutes earlier, you were able to see how different industries and different businesses work, and you were able to be exposed to it. And historically, you cannot take what they're doing and apply it to the farm, but oftentimes it's an inspiration, and you modify that thought process or modify what they're doing and use it to make your farm more efficient or to do something better. And that brackish area of where you're going and saying, well, I really can't apply this to the farm, but there's a printing plant in town, and this is what they do with something, and I can modify that, and I can use that to my benefit on the farm. And sadly, that is a negative of being truly 100% out in farm country. There's so many, many more positives, and I wish I was there. But as far as being in a brackish area, it's not really country, it's not really city, it's not really farm, it's not really suburban, is that it makes you think out of the box. And if you were to look at anything, anyone in any business, and we'll talk about obviously agriculture because this is a farm podcast, but if you look at the high yield farmers, and I don't care who it is, and I don't care whether it's a worldwide high yield farmer or just a county guy, is that most of the time, if not every time, they are thinking out of the box. They're looking, or outside the box, as some people say, they're looking at what they're doing, and nothing is engraved in stone. And they'll try different things, and they'll apply logics from other areas onto their farm, and oftentimes they fail. Like any experiment, every experiment is a success, but it's more the mindset of thinking outside the box. So that is really what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about how you need to think out of the box in the farm shop. Now, I also want to introduce another topic to you that goes hand in hand with this, but you may not be familiar with. I know you're familiar with it in one sense because we often talk about it in agriculture, and that is ROI, return on investment. But it's usually applied to some sort of crop input, and you know, you could put a foliar fungicide on, and you're looking for a return on investment. You're looking for not only your money back from your fungicide, but you're looking for to increase your yield. And if you increase your yield more than the fungicide cost and the application of it cost, then you have a return on your investment. So that's quite rudimentary, and I'm talking to the choir as far as understanding that is concerned. But we need to do, and this really came to me from working in the automobile industry, is that we call it ROI, but it really needs to be broken down into two different categories. There's direct ROI and indirect ROI. And on the farm, when we're talking about crop inputs, we're talking about direct ROI. You spend a dollar, you get $2 back. You get your dollar and an additional dollar profit. You spend a dollar, you get a dollar back. There's no real value of ROI there. You spend a dollar and get $5 back, and you have a very strong ROI. And that is direct ROI, return on investment. So there's a direct correlation for every dollar spent, and gives you a multiplicative return, like interest in a bank. Now, the auto industry is very big on not only obviously direct ROI, they want to build a car and sell it to you for a profit, but they are very big on what is called indirect ROI. And indirect ROI is really what this podcast and the Farm Machinery Digest website is all about. Because if you look at your ledger column or look at your balance sheet on your farm, nothing that I am talking to you about or will be talking to you about, hopefully God willing, for many years, or what you've read from me, is going to affect your ROI. I'm not talking about any crop inputs. I'm not talking about anything agronomically. I'm not talking about anything like that. What I'm talking about is indirect ROI. What I'm talking about is you keeping more of your money, that you do not spend unnecessary funds that you have made on repairs, machinery, unnecessary service procedures, what have you. So I'm talking about indirect ROI. And why that's a very big part of the car industry is that a lot of vehicles or things that the car industry does is indirect ROI. For example, a year or so ago, Ford came out, using them as a textbook example, Ford came out with the GT supercar, not the Mustang GT, the GT supercar, which is patented after the old GT40 from the 60s that won the Le Mans race. And that car, a friend of mine, Bobby Ida, I've mentioned him on the podcast once or twice before. He has one on order, and I think he's going to get it this spring, God willing. It's been on order for like a year and a half. But anyway, I think it's the list price in that car, just the base price is like $480,000. So it's a $500,000 car. I mean, it's a top-of-the-line combine. So it's a half a million dollar car, and you know, you could say to yourself, well, man, Ford is making a fortune on this thing. It's $500,000. They're probably, I don't know the actual numbers, but I would not be surprised if they're losing between $20,000 and $80,000 on each car that they sell for $500,000. And you may say, that's crazy. Why are they losing that kind of money? Because the development cost, the engineering cost, the emission certification cost, the cost to build the car, the all roll into that, and they cannot sell enough cars, or they're not making enough cars to amortize that cost to make that vehicle profitable. And so you may ask yourself, well, why are they doing it? Because within the car industry, it is called a halo car. And what it does is it's indirect ROI. They're making an investment in this particular vehicle to create a halo over the brand. And that halo over the brand is hopefully going to be the impetus for you to come into the showroom with your wife and say, man, a Ford could build this 220-mile-an-hour car and do all this, and look at this thing, it's fantastic, and have you come into the showroom and look at a Ford Escape, or look at a Ford Edge, or a Fusion, or F-150 pickup truck, or whatever it may be, and use that as the catalyst for you to make a purchase and make a bond with the Ford Motor Company. So that really is indirect ROI. If you were going to another example, and a farm example, would be, let's say that you travel someplace to go to a workshop, and hopefully it's one of the Machinery Digest workshops, but any workshop. Well, let's say you go to a trade show, for instance, like Commodity Classic, which I've been blessed to be able to present twice on the main stage, compliments of Firestone Ag and Successful Farming Magazine. So you spend the money to go to Commodity Classic. That is an indirect ROI. And you are looking to go there and glean things, learn things, and bring them back to your farm. But you're not going to be able to go to Commodity Classic or to go to one of my workshops or somebody else's workshops or a winter crop meeting and say, man, I went there and I got 5 more bushels per acre. You may get that indirectly by what you have learned, but you may end up getting that, but you're not going to, or it's not going to be direct where you put something on. You may learn about a special product or learn about a procedure, but then you have to implement it to get that return. So that is really indirect ROI. And I think that is something that the agricultural industry needs to start to look outside the box. And I think that the crop companies, the fertilizer companies, what have you, really need to start to not only look at ROI, but look at indirect ROI. Because, and that's why I also do have to applaud AgroLiquid, because they were one of the first people to stand behind me and the Farm Machinery Digest and the Idle Chatter podcast, and then also Hefty Seed. Because, I mean, obviously I'm not talking about seed, or I'm not talking about liquid fertilizer, but those companies saw the value in the farmer becoming educated and becoming more efficient. And if you become more efficient through education on your machinery and your shop procedures, then what will happen is that you will be more profitable, and a profitable farmer, indirect ROI, a profitable farmer will be able to take those funds and say, well, I want to buy better fertility, or I want to buy better genetics when I plant next season. And that is what this is all about. So it's indirect ROI. And there's nothing that I'm ever going to tell you that's going to ring your cash register, but what it's going to do is allow you to keep more of what rings in that cash register. And I think that's, you know, I think we're too fixated in this industry on the Chicago Board of Trade and the prices of crops, and obviously that's a major component of it. I'm not saying that whatsoever, but the thing is that if you have a very efficient farm operation and you have a very efficient farm shop operation, everything that you're doing in that farm shop and with your equipment is establishing an indirect ROI, you could weather lower crop prices very easily, or more easily, I should say, more easily than somebody who has an inefficient operation as far as their machinery is concerned. Because you may be making it on the one end, say, oh man, we got $8 corn back, this is great. But if you're losing it in the farm shop, it would be, you know, the analogy that I always make is that, you know, we heat with oil, with heating oil, and in the Northeast, the majority of us do. And, you know, I could be burning oil like crazy, and if I have the window open, I'm wearing a sweater in the house. And I'm saying, man, I've got this $1,000 a month heating bills, and I'm freezing and wearing a sweater in the house. That's because the window is open. And the indirect ROI by not applying that logic is basically leaving the window open. And when you apply indirect ROI, you close that window, you keep the heat in the house. And did you make more money? No, but you are more profitable. And that's really what it comes down to. And I listen to a lot of shows and read a lot of stuff and what have you, and I really think that the agricultural community needs to look at the auto industry and look at other industries and think outside the box and start to talk about some indirect ROI. And same thing is, I mean, I'm saying this not because Firestone is coming on board with this special delivery section, but you look at tires. And, you know, so many guys go and they need tires for a tractor or a spray or something, and they look to buy the cheapest tire. And, you know, and I certainly understand that. We used to have a farmer across the road, there was a dairy farmer. He sadly retired and passed on, but Charlie Miller. And, you know, he used to say they're all round, black, and hard. So, and I guess maybe 40, 50 years ago they were that way. But, you know, if you go and you do so many things on your farm to build up the soil structure, to build up the tilt of the soil, to build up organic matter, to build up microbial life in your soil, then don't you want the tire that's going to ride on that soil and touch that soil to have the minimal impact on it, on and the minimal amount of compaction? That's an indirect ROI. So when you go to buy tires, don't look at saying that a regular radial tire costs X amount, and a IF or a VF tire, which I prefer VF tire, costs so much more, and don't use the Charlie Miller syndrome, whoa, they're all round, black, and hard, right? The thing basically is that really that differential between the basic radial and the VF tire is indirect ROI for your soil structure. And, you know, that's how I look at it, is that, you know, I'm planting cover crops, I'm doing minimum till or conservation till, I'm going no-till on my planter, and then I'm going to go and I'm going to save a couple of dollars on a tire that has a life of many, many years, and go and compact my soil or degrade my soil structure to a greater extent because I have a tire that's inefficient and that's coming in contact with the soil. So once we start to think about indirect ROI, so that investment that you would make in a VF tire versus a standard radial is really indirect ROI. And if that tire is going to last you 10 years, you're having a better soil structure over the next 10 years, or degrading where you're riding the traffic areas to a much less extent. And also, like this year, we had a wet... Most of us had a wet season. You know, you're going into that field when it's wet, and at that particular point, you're hoping that you had a VF tire, because you don't want to ride in a wet soil, but you have to ride in the wet soil, so you want to have the least damage as possible. So that all comes back to thinking out of the box and indirect ROI. So now, what I am going to go into now, because if you haven't gleaned this, that, you know, these podcasts have no notes. I talk to you as if we were talking at a coffee shop or standing, you know, sitting on the back of the tailgate someplace or leaning up on the side of the combine, and I just talk. I know what I want to talk about, and I have no notes. But for these next five topics, I did make myself one line note, so I have to have full disclosure here and be honest with you. So how are ways that you could think out of the box in your farm shop? All right. The first way is do cost share, or share some shop equipment that you either cannot afford to buy and the other caveat being that you do not use all of the time. Now, the first thing that comes into mind is an air conditioner recharging recovery station. That's probably a $3,000 or $4,000 machine. And it is imperative, and I am going to do a podcast on this, hopefully probably towards the end of the winter into the spring, is that it is imperative with every air conditioning system, and I don't care whether it's in a passenger vehicle or in a farm truck, combine, what have you, every air conditioning system, the refrigerant, the R134-8 has no idea what it's in, the compressor has no idea whether it's in your wife's SUV or your combine, is that it's imperative that system be serviced. And what I mean by being serviced is not just cleaning the cabin air filter and taking the bugs and the chaff off the condenser. I'm not talking about then checking the belt. Is that every air conditioner system will wick in moisture over time. And we'll get into this in the podcast in a future date, as I said. But when that moisture mixes with the refrigerant, it creates acid. And acid destroys everything in that air conditioning system. In the accumulator or receiver dryer, depending if it's on the low side or the high side, what it's called, most of them today have accumulators because they're on the low side, not the high side. There is a desiccant, which is a little bag that has salt-like crystals in it, that like when you buy electronics, and that's used to absorb the moisture. What historically happens is the people don't service the air conditioning system, and the acid forms, and it eats the desiccant bag. And the desiccant bag, the little particles come out and pump through the whole system. They plug the orifice tube. They ruin the compressor. They do everything, and you have a $3,000 or $4,000 repair. All right, so the thing, and in today's farm equipment, air conditioning is not a luxury, it's a necessity. I've said that before. And there's actually an article in the learning series on my website under the learning tab, or learn tab about this if you want to read a little bit more. But anyway, the way you go about avoiding that is every few years you need to discharge the air conditioner system. That means take all the Freon refrigerant out. Freon is actually a brand name. It was DuPont's name, I believe. So we'll take all the refrigerant out, and it has to be stored in a recovery machine. And then what you do is you pull a vacuum on that system, because water will boil at about 52, 53 degrees at sea level in a vacuum. So you're boiling off all the moisture, and now you're and taking out the contaminants, and you're filling it back up with the proper amount of refrigerant. If you do that every 3 or 4 years, your AC system in your equipment will probably outlast the machine unless you pop a hole in something. So it's very, very important for you to do that. If you were to bring something into town to the dealership to do that, it's going to cost you $200 or $300 to do that job. It's usually $100 or $200 for the service, and then $30 a pound or so for the refrigerant. So it could cost you $200, $150, $300, depending upon the size of the system. If you have a dynamic farm operation, you have a lot of equipment. There's a lot of air conditioners, and in your pickup trucks and in the other vehicles and the farm equipment. The thing is that if you were to invest in a recovery station, and charging a recovery station, which costs about $4,000, your cost to do that service would only be the refrigerant, which you would buy the refrigerant bulk, and it's not $30 a pound as a service center would charge you. But the thing is that you don't need an air conditioner charging station 365 days out of the year. So let's think outside the box. Let's get together with a couple of friends and say, okay, we're going to invest in this AC station. It's $4,000, and we're going to invest in it. And each one of us is going to buy our own refrigerant. So then I'm going to go and I'm going to do all of my equipment, and then I'm going to take care of the machine, and I'm going to give it to the next person, and he's going to do his equipment. So the consumable part, the refrigerant, is yours. You're buying it, and you're just taking the machine around. So basically, in essence, if you had four guys and you invested $1,000 a piece, you would be able to service all of your equipment's AC system in direct ROI and avoid having a $3,000 to $5,000 repair. $2,000 to $5,000, let's say it's on a car, $2,000, $2,500 on a combine, maybe $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 repair for air conditioning. All right, so you spent $1,000, right? But a $5,000 repair, and, you know, Murphy's Law being the way it is, and that just happened to me this week, not my AC system. Charlotte and I got married, it'll be 20 years, and we built a house here on the farm, and we bought everything new, obviously. New stove, new refrigerator, new washing machine, new dryer, and then over the years we bought other stuff. And in this past week, my leaf blower went bad, my washing machine bearing went bad, and my well tank went bad. So everything came bad at one time. But I had said to Charlotte 20 years ago, I said, look, you know, we got to save our money because 15, 18, 20 years from now, all this stuff is going to go bad. So we just have to be able to put money away so we know we have to replace it. And, you know, that's what we ended up doing. And, you know, thank God that wasn't an issue. But the fact of the matter is, indirect ROI. You have a piece of equipment like that, you're not going to use it 365 days out of the year. Cost share it with a bunch of other farmers and your friends of yours, guys that you know you could trust and to take care of, and get that cost down dramatically and have that indirect ROI. Another thing that I, you know, like to talk about in direct ROI, there's a piece of equipment that I am going to be doing an article on. It's called a smoke machine, and they're between $2,000 and $5,000 depending upon the size of it that you get and the operating pressure. That's the greatest thing to find leaks, vacuum leaks in an engine, pinholes in the intercooler, leaks in a sprayer, leaks in any type of tank, a storage tank, a liquid fertilizer storage tank, what have you. Great, great piece of equipment. It's called a smoke machine. And if you bought a bigger one that you want to pressurize something that's larger, all right, you probably have $5,000 into it. But then again, you know, co-op this with your friends. So you buy a smoke machine, no one's going to need it all the time, but when you do need it, so let's say you get your you buy a $4,000 one, again you get four guys, you have $1,000. So now basically you invested $2,000 of your own farm's money, $1,000 in a co-op air conditioner recovery station, and $1,000 in a smoke machine. All right, you got $2,000. Now you have the access to these pieces of equipment that will truly, truly help your bottom line, because you'll be able to efficiently fix something, diagnose it accurately, not wasting money on repairs. And then you will be able to get out there and get into the field when you need to get in the field. And it's very, very cost effective. I mean, so many guys will think of nothing of spending $10,000 on a toolbox, which has no ROI, direct or indirect, but it sure does look pretty when they come into your farm shop, right? But here it is, I'm talking about two $1,000 investments, your cost, collectively with other farmers, to get this equipment in your hands. So that's one way of thinking. So core share farm shop equipment that is specialized and you're not going to use all the time. The second thing that I have on my list is what I spoke about in the beginning with the with New Jersey being brackish, and that is look to other industries for ideas and then modify them for your needs. I mean, if you look at the construction industry, and this, you know, probably would not apply to everyone in the farm, but if you look at the construction industry, you know, most of the time, if they need a specialized piece of equipment, they rent it. So, and like I said, this may not go one-to-one, but look at other industries. Look how they handle different things and say, yes, you know, I could do that and I could modify that slightly, or I could, you know, twist that around a little bit, and that would be a benefit to my farm shop. So look at other industries. Don't be closed-minded and say, you know, and as an engineer, that's what I look at. I mean, I see a printing press. I'll look at a printing press and see how they wired up something, or how they ran a gear train or ran a chain on it, and say, wow, that's really great. And then you could end up applying that to something else. So be open-minded. I did a podcast a while back called, you know, about NIH, not invented here. Don't just think because it's not agriculture that it has no value to you on the farm. Yeah, it may not have value to you one-to-one, but there'll be some small element of that you could bring back to your farm shop, bring back to your business, and make it more profitable. And I'm going to repeat it again, because I actually did this last year at Commodity Classic, and I would say it's not what you make, and I had the audience chant back, it is what you keep. So I want you to be profitable. I want you to, and just look at it this way, you know, if you could be profitable at low crop prices, if you keep that same discipline and you have that same foundation in place, when crop prices rebound, and you know that they will, they always do, right? Crop prices rebound. Do you know how profitable your farm could be, and how great this could be? Because if you could, you know, if you could make it, you know, in the bad times, once the good times come, then you're really, really going to soar, as long as you don't go crazy and waste it. But by implementing this, you know, what's really good about the hard times is that they teach you how to really be efficient. And it's, you know, it's imperative that we be efficient, but we cannot just look at the income side of the ledger. We have to look at the outgoing side of the ledger. And the farm shop is a big place where a lot of those outgoings, if that's even a proper word, happened, but we just write it off in our mind as bad, like, hey Joe, the motor blew up on my pickup truck, I have lousy luck this year. And that's not the case. The motor blew up on your pickup truck, most likely. I'm not saying that it can't blow up, but blew up because you never spent 5 cents a gallon to treat the fuel and you hydraulic the motor because one of the injectors stuck open and you bent the connecting rod. So whatever. So we have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. The third thing that I want to talk to you about is that you need to have your tire dealer come by and weigh all your equipment and then write it down in a notebook. So you have a notebook with the tire pressures set so that when you go out into the field with that piece of equipment, whether it's a sprayer, whether it's a chisel plow, whether it's a planter, you know what to set those tire pressures at for the proper load and minimum compaction. Indirect ROI. Most tire equipment dealers, you know, will do this for you for free, and they're doing it for indirect ROI. They want to make a good relationship with you, so when it comes time to buy tires, that you will go to them. So take advantage of that. Use the winter to weigh all your equipment, write it down, put the implements on the back, reweigh it, and then you could look on the chart. Every tire company has a chart from the industry standards that if at this weight and this size tire, you need to run this much air pressure in it. And then once you have that, you don't need a $30,000 on the fly inflation system, and that's moot anyway if you don't know what tire pressure to set it at. So indirect ROI, spend some time with that and arrange it with your tire dealer and get that all set up and have that notebook with it written down. When you go into the field and you hook it up to the planter, you know what pressures to run on that tractor to minimally impact that soil structure. And the last thing I want to talk about before I go into the special delivery section is, you know, indirect ROI. Buy quality, not price. And, you know, I tell people, I'm not cheap, I'm conservative. And you know, the thing is that, you know, look at the quality of something. Don't just look at the price. And it has to be a price-quality ratio. And if you look at that, and when you're buying your parts, you're buying oils, you're buying fuel, you're buying lubricants, whatever the thing is, tools, look at the price-quality ratio, and because that's really an indirect ROI. If you buy a tool that makes you efficient, it costs you a little bit more up front, but it gives you money back on the back end over and over and over again, that's really going to be an indirect ROI. So enough said. I drilled it into you, and hopefully, and if you have any questions about it, please feel free to contact me at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. You know, I just want to tell you now that special delivery is brought to you by Firestone Ag, a company founded by Harvey Firestone, a fourth-generation farmer from Columbiana, Ohio. Harvey dreamed of putting rubber tires on farm tractors, and his innovative mindset is the core of Firestone Ag today and lives on with their 23-degree tread bar design and AD2 technology. The soil is the lifeblood of your farm. Trust it only to Firestone. Alrighty, my first letter here is the gentleman calls me Hot Rod, and he says, Hot Rod, I am enjoying your podcasts and have learned a lot from them. I also like your toolbox tests, but I do not submit them since I may be embarrassed if I get the questions wrong. And a lot of people that, this guy is at least honest, is that from our analytics, a lot of people are going to the toolbox tests, but a good number of you are not submitting it. you need, the way it's set up is that you need to submit it to get the proper answers, and all I get is an email address. And today, you know, you came, it could be my next door neighbor before I know, you know, whatever, joes4020@gmail.com. I don't know who that is. I mean, so, but, you know, as an aside with this, his question is that, you know, please go to those toolbox tests because they're great learning tools. It's nothing to be embarrassed about. And if you get it wrong, you get it wrong. And I give you the right emails back, the right answer. I don't know who you are. I don't know anything. So please, you know, submit those. And every month I give away a free T-shirt for those people who submitted. I have a drawing. But anyway, in test number three, to get back to this question, you talk about diesel truck engines without EGR. Could you explain EGR to me? I am sure other listeners have the same question. Thanks, Harry from Utah. Well, yes, Harry, first of all, it's not just truck engines, it's any diesel engine. And EGR stands for exhaust gas recirculation. And what that basically is, that there's an emission called oxides of nitrogen, and both gasoline engines and diesel engines emit it, but diesel engines emit more. And that's really one of the main components of the TFR emissions, is to lower oxides of nitrogen emissions. And what is basically found many years ago, the auto industry was the first to control oxides of nitrogen back in 1973. And a diesel is the same way. It was found that if you put exhaust gas back into the cylinder bore and use it as a filler. So what it does is that it takes the place of a combustible mixture, and because it is inert, it will not burn. It takes the place of the combustible mixture, and it lowers the exhaust gas temperature. And by lowering the exhaust gas temperature, you limit oxides of nitrogen production. There's an equation called the Zeldovich equation for all of you gearheads out there. And to produce oxides of nitrogen, Mr. Zeldovich realized that it's pressure, heat, and exposure time. And when the leading edge flame front temperature in the bore, as the flame travels across the bore, reaches 2500 degrees and above, what happens is that the oxides of nitrogen production jumps up. So by introducing this inert exhaust gas through exhaust gas recirculation, even though the air is hot, it is acting as a filler, like a carrier, and doesn't allow to have as much combustible mixture, which lowers the exhaust gas temperature and in turn minimizes oxides of nitrogen production. There is I have an article about TFR, but you know, this is not just TFR. TFR just became the strictest standards, but the reduction of oxides of nitrogen has been around for quite some time. So I would suggest, Harry from Utah, please go to my website to the Learn tab and then the learning series, and I will be able to explain that to you a little bit more detail. That's really something more you have to read than hear me talk about. But that's what EGR is, and it puts exhaust gas back into the cylinder to minimize oxides of nitrogen production. And to answer your question, yes, there are some engines. The federal government, both on road vehicles and agricultural vehicles, does not care how the manufacturer achieves a reduction of oxides of nitrogen. They just know that it has to be down to a certain level. And there are some companies that have been able to, through the design of their injection system, their cylinder head, and what have you, been able to get a reduction of oxides of nitrogen without EGR, but that's really in the off-road market. Everything that's on the road has EGR, whether it's a pickup truck or whether it's a semi, Class 8 semi. But the agricultural machinery standards are less than road vehicles. And Case IH is big for that because they have what is called an SCR only, supplemental catalytic reduction system, and they do not. They're currently don't need EGR to get the oxides of nitrogen levels down, but the SCR system is what controls the oxides of nitrogen. So they're very heavily based on SCR and not controlling it in the engine. And there's nothing wrong with that, just different school of thought. So that is that, and I would like to get to one more question. This gentleman is Jerry from Michigan. He says, hello. I have a John Deere planter that has its own alternator on it that is run hydraulically. I am having some issues with the electronics on the planter, but the alternator seems to be charging. Could there be another problem that I am not seeing? I appreciate your thoughts. Well, thank you so much for writing me, Jerry. Yes, there is a problem that could be, and there's a number of problems, but I only have a minute or two to talk to you here because I'm coming to the end of this podcast time. But please, you know, email me at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. And I will give you some more stuff. But the low-hanging fruit, the most common thing, is that I would have to say that it either has a bad diode in the alternator or it has a bad, weak ground someplace. I don't want to say bad, but a high impedance ground. But it's probably more of a bad diode in the alternator. And if I remember correctly, I think a few podcasts back, somebody wrote almost a similar letter. It wasn't with a planter. They were having some alternator issues. And what a diode is, and I do have an article also on my learning series about diodes, and I think it's under the lecture hall. Excuse me, it's actually like a little podcast, a 4-minute podcast. But what a diode is a one-way electronic check valve. It only allows current to flow one way, like you would have a flow valve on a water filter to a sprayer. And if the diode goes bad, or actually probably didn't go bad, it's probably becoming weak, and it'll be like a leaky faucet, and it's passing current both ways. And an alternator actually makes AC current. That's alternating current. And the farm equipment, the machinery, runs on DC current. And what the diode does is it, in electronics, it's called chopping the signal, and it takes it and it takes that AC ripple and makes it into like a DC type of signal. And if a diode goes bad, starts to go bad, I'm using the word bad when I shouldn't, starts to become weak, what will happen is that the alternator output will skew slightly, but you may not be able to really glean that. So instead of 14.7 volts, it may be 14.3 or 14.4, but the signal that it is putting out is what we would call in electrical engineering is dirty. And it has, it's not clean, and it has, it's got some what we would call unrectified AC. And what that will do is, and I said this before on this podcast, is that it will drive modern electronics crazy. It's like putting water in the gasoline. So I would have to say that, you know, you could have a high impedance ground, but I would have to say that it probably has a weak diode in the alternator. And the only way you could truly accurately quantify whether the diode is weak is to use an oscilloscope and put an oscilloscope pattern on it. The other way you'd be able to do is if you took the alternator apart and found the diode and you did an Ohm's test on it. But that's really not practical, is that you would need to use an oscilloscope. And last week's podcast, well, the past 2 weeks, I spoke about the right to repair, and I mentioned this oscilloscope, and probably a couple of podcasts out, I'm going to talk about a little bit more. But, you know, I would have to say, Jerry, that it probably has a weak diode in the alternator. You may be able to pull that alternator off and bring it into town to an auto electric shop, if they even exist anymore, and the guy will spin it on a test bench and put in the oscilloscope on it and see if that pattern is clean. And I would say that's probably the most likely cause. So listen, I want to thank you again so much for listening. I want to thank the Farm and Ranch Ag Network for carrying my podcast. And if you listen to it there, and I also ask you to come to my website at farmmachinerydigest.com and take advantage of everything that is there. And, you know, it's an honor to be able to help American agriculture. And I truly hope that, you know, you're learning from this and enjoying it. And please feel free to communicate with me in any way, shape, or form that you like. Send smoke signals if need be. But I want you to know, as always, the Hot Rod Farmer is pulling for you, the American farmer and rancher, and this blessed and beloved nation of mine. God bless you, God bless America, and hopefully you'll tune in next week.